Good morning. This is the Professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, welcoming you to a special edition of Vantage Point on 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network here in New York. This edition is going to be called Countdown to the Professor's Retirement. That's right. I'm going to be stepping down as the distinguished lecturer at York College. And today we're going to have a special tribute to York College, City University of New York, for the duration of our show. You're going to hear a great deal about the great people at York College that I've had the privilege of working for and with over the last decade. But before I launch into the program, sad news that I received late last night. One of the great giants, actually one of the founders of liberation theology, Dr. James Cohen, has made his transition. And again, he was one of the architects of Black liberation theology. When I look back on a very, very interesting life's journey, one of the highlights of that journey was actually traveling with Professor Cohen in 1971 on my very first trip to Africa with him and a group of the key leaders in the Black liberation theology movement, Gayard Wilmore, Reverend Dr. James Cohen, of course, was leading that delegation, the head of the Progressive National Black Baptist Convention. Viola Plummer was a part of that delegation, Hobart James, a number of people. It was a very momentous delegation that went to Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia. We had a wonderful, wonderful time, and I was a resource person to that delegation. And yes, let's move on now to directly speaking about WBAI and WBAI buddies. I always start my show pushing the idea of becoming a WBAI buddy because it helps to build a sustaining base for the station. And we there are hundreds, thousands of people out there who contribute, but there are others who do not. But even if you are a regular contributor, it would be great if you signed up to be a WBAI buddy, which simply means that for as little as $10 a month, you can become a sustaining member. And it's painless. It comes out of your checking account. It comes out of your off your credit card. And you don't feel it, but you are building a foundation and a base for WBAI. So I push WBAI buddies all the time, and we hope that you will sign up. It's very simple. Go to givetowbai.org and sign up to become a WBAI buddy today. But again, the context for today's show is the fact that I am indeed going to be stepping down as the distinguished lecturer at York College, City University of New York, and we're going to have a major event, a campus community event on May 17th, which is the anniversary of the Brown versus Board of Education decision, where I will be delivering my last or my final campus community lecture. And we're going to invite you all to come and be there and be a part of it, because it's not the end. I'm not retiring from the movement, but I am retiring in this position, which I've enjoyed for this over a past decade. So today, we're going to be talking to a number of the key leaders at York College, beginning with the president momentarily. And then we're going to go to the vice president for student development and his executive assistant, two of the outstanding faculty members, very, very dynamic faculty members, Professor George White, Dr. Selena Rogers, and ending up with a guy who partners with me in terms of our internship program. And we have had a great time, you know, placing people with elected officials, community agencies, and so forth. So we end up with Dr. Tony Andrews. So it's going to be a great show. Listen and learn. And again, we're going to be continuing to tell you about this event that we're having on May 17th at the Performing Arts Center on the campus of York College. So if you've never been there, come visit the professor on this particular day. Well, joining us now is the esteemed president of York College, City University of New York, and the person who has been my leader at York College for all this these many years, and someone who has really, really been kind and courteous and all of the great things in terms of making my tenure, I hope, a successful one at York College. And that is none other than Dr. Marcia Keys, who is the president of York College, City University of New York. Dr. Keyes, welcome to Vantage Point.
Well, I was still trying to reach Dr. Keyes as I talked to her staff. She was in a meeting right now, so they're trying to break into the meeting and have her join us shortly.
Okay, all right. I thought that we had her. But anyway, so let me. That gives me an opportunity to say more about the forthcoming event. And it is on the website, IBW21.org. There is a posting with a press release which talks about my pending retirement. And, you know, being a distinguished lecturer, really, York College's first distinguished lecturer was something that I relish because York College is a very special institution, like Medgar Evers, coming out of the community, people demanding that there be a space and place for higher education in Jamaica, Queens. And we'll talk to President Keyes a little bit about that when she joins us. And it's afforded me the opportunity to do a number of campus community lectures and bring people together around those. But most excitingly, in some ways, also to work with students in a very, very interesting way in terms of student engagement. So we've had students go to Haiti with me, to the State of the Black World Conference in New Orleans, where they actually had an opportunity to go down to the Lower Ninth Ward and actually see that community that was decimated shortly after the earthquake in 2008. We took them to Howard University. We had four students go there. We had about 15 students go with us to Howard University in 2012. And then Newark, another State of the Black World Conference, about 14 students who went with us there. And the highlight in terms of student engagement from my perspective was in 2015, we took a contingent of faculty and students, about 36 students and four faculty and staff, to Selma, Alabama for the 50th anniversary of Bloody Sunday, the Selma to Montgomery March across the Independence Bridge. It was an incredible experience, and they traveled over land. They stopped at different sites and so forth. And once those students returned, we issued a challenge for them to become involved, and several of them did, and they became elected to student government, and one of them became student government president. So that was kind of the crowning achievement in terms of that kind of engagement. And we've had, you know, forums on virtually every key subject. When Trayvon Martin was killed, we had a forum on that. We had a major forum on do Black Lives Matter to Black People. We've had lectures on reparations and any number of subjects where we have engaged students in being involved and sort of discussing and debating these issues in a major kind of way. And it's really, really, you know, been fun. It's been enjoyable. It's been, you know, relevant. And the other thing is the collaboration we have with YC Radio on your campus. So right now we are also being heard on the Internet through YC Radio. That's a collaboration that we have pulled together in working with the York College radio station. And that's been another highlight of my tenure at York College, so that in addition to the WBAI audience, we have the York College community audience tuning in as well. And we've also occasionally had faculty members on to interview them. And today, you're going to hear from a number of them over the course of the next 2 hours. So that's, again, the context. I don't know whether we have President Keyes yet. I know we're waiting to connect with her. And because we wanted to lead the show with the president at York College and the work that she's done to really, you know, make York, you know, it's always been a vibrant institution. But she's, you know, she's been there a while and has put her mark on York College as a part of a public university system, which is also something that I strongly believe in. I'll be talking about that a bit in my lecture, my final lecture. And by the way, again, it'll be on the occasion of the 64th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education. And the topic will be Toward a More Perfect Union, Finishing the Unfinished Black Freedom Struggle. Toward a More Perfect Union, Finishing the Unfinished Black Freedom Struggle. And that will be my final campus community lecture. And again, you know, this is retiring from your college, but I'm not retiring from the movement, as I say in the press release. That is, that you can read and see on the IBW website, IBW21.org. Really, this affords me more time to focus on the Institute of the Black World 21st Century as what I call my legacy project. I'm really concerned that we have in place an institution that serves as a resource center that can facilitate and convene in the way that IBW does all over, not only the city of New York, but all over the country, major convenings, including the one we just concluded in Newark, New Jersey, the Newark as Model City Initiative, which was a spectacular success. We've had discussions about reparations, the major conference we had here in New York about 18 months ago, where people came from over 22 nations, and it was hosted really at York College. And that was one of the, and Professor Sir Hilary Beckles came up for that particular, he's the president at that time, he was president of the Cave Hill campus of the University of the West Indies in Barbados. But he came up, he is now president of the entire university system. But we had people from 22 nations from all over the hemisphere and the world come to York College for this reparations conference that we held. Really, really an incredible event. And the State of the Black World Conference that was held in Newark. And many of you came over to that conference as well. We do these kinds of gatherings, which have an action-oriented focus. The National African American Reparations Commission pushing a 10-point preliminary program for reparations for Africans in America, as well as H.R. 40, the bill that has now been changed to deal with the with the whole question of reparations. It's no longer a study bill, but it's a bill that is now dealing with the question of reparations studies. So that's kind of where we are in relationship to that. But in any event, it looks as if we're not going to have President Keyes. Apparently there was some mix-up in terms of the date, which may have been a faux pas on my part. Somehow there was a sense that the interview was tomorrow at May 1st as opposed to April 30th. And given the tremendous amount of things that are on my brain at this time, it's not inconceivable that I may have made an error in that regard, which is another reason why I'm stepping down. It's just I've got to focus on fewer things. And the thing I want to focus on most strongly is the building, the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, scaling it up, strengthening it, so that it can last as a legacy to really my life's work, in terms of, again, not for me personally, but in terms of an institution that looks at the disparate conditions in our community, that looks at the fact that there are organizations that often sort of are disconnected and are in silos and don't really work together in ways that they ought to. And so we specialize in doing that with the Institute of the Black World 21st Century. So in Pittsburgh and in Washington, D.C. and Baltimore and Philadelphia, we have what we call justice collaboratives, organizing to end the war on drugs and racially biased criminal justice and policies and practices and policing issues. And forever and ever and ever, we've had problems with the police, as we talked about last week on our show with representatives of the Center for Constitutional Rights, as well as the Malcolm X grassroots movement. But in these cities, we pull together justice collaboratives, people who are working on criminal justice issues, working on the violence and fratricide and the murders, the internal murders in our community. And in that regard, we come together and share ideas, and people who had not been meeting with each other, which is one of our problems. You know, we're all doing good work, but coming together to collaborate, to share ideas, and then to figure out ways to act on issues that we are looking at is kind of what we do in terms of joint work. So in cities, we've dealt with issues like working around police brutality We've dealt with issues like ban the box, dealing with the question of making it more possible for people who are, and when they return to the community, to be able to get jobs in spite of the fact that they have a record, because that's a big issue. And we have thousands upon thousands of people who are now going to be coming back. And as they come back, we want to make sure that they have jobs. And if you have a record, just an arrest, you don't even have to have done some time, that blocks you very often from actually getting a job. And so we really, really want to, we've been working on that issue. The decriminalization of marijuana is another issue we've been working on with these justice collaboratives. Some people, you know, get hung up on, you know, drugs, particularly marijuana. I think by now, I think the verdict's pretty well out. It is no more addictive. In fact, it's not addictive at all, except some people, you know, it's like alcohol, and, you know, some people can't drink. They just can't drink. It's not good for them. They become addicts. I've never heard of somebody really becoming an addict on marijuana. But nonetheless, it is banned and it's criminalized, and really it creates all kinds of difficulties because it's criminalized. And there's always been a disproportionate emphasis on arresting black people and brown people, but particularly black people. Even when you look at those, the data in California, where we worked on Proposition 64, the Adult Use of Marijuana Act, which actually passed, and IBW played a role in that. When we looked at the data, you know, who was being arrested? Yes, brown people were being arrested, but the people who were getting arrested most, by black people, no question about it, the targeting of our community. So we have sought to at least decriminalize it so that you maybe get a fine or, you know, something, a ticket, as opposed to going to jail. Ultimately, the best route, we feel, is to legalize, regulate, and tax, as is currently now being done in California. So recreational, not like medical marijuana. In fact, it was a good show yesterday on CNN with Dr. Sanjay Gupta talking about medical marijuana. He changed his whole position after he studied it, because there are definite medicinal purposes for cannabis, which is another term for marijuana, if you will. And so not only medical marijuana, but recreational marijuana is, you know, it's just like you get, if you can go to the state store and buy alcohol, you should be able to go and just like you get cigarettes. You know, cigarettes are more damaging probably than marijuana is, actually. But it's your choice, you know. I mean, I don't advocate for it because I use marijuana. I don't. But the point is, we were the ones being disproportionately arrested and going to jail in some instances. And so this lifts that burden. It also means that that record will not be there. The great challenge now is to be able to organize in such a way that the industry, the proceeds from the industry can be utilized to help benefit black communities, the communities that have been ravaged. And that's one of the propositions that that we have in that was in the bill in California. Means that from some of the revenues from the taxing can go back for counseling, for education, and also economic development. It's not as much as we would have liked, but it's millions of dollars that will be reinvested in the black community in that regard. So that's a part of what we do in terms of these justice collaboratives. We also have, we talked about the National African American Reparations Commission. We also have a Pan-African Unity Dialogue, which brings together, and this is in keeping with the cooperative principle or the collaborative principle, that brings together African Americans, Afro-Latinos, African Americans, and Caribbean Americans. In our communities today, New York has always been that way, but a lot of communities aren't. But then even in New York, it's changed dramatically, because there are now far more Haitians here than there were, let's say, 25 years ago. You have a little Senegal, a little Ghana. You know, you have larger numbers of continental Africans who have moved in. And so what we do is just make sure that we're cooperating and collaborating and not conflicting with each other. Because just because we have the same skin color does not mean that we are actually working collaboratively. In fact, in some instances, there's a sense of resentment that these people are coming and so forth and so on. So we work to try to mitigate those potential conflicts, but we turn it into an affirmative, into a positive in terms of working together. So one of the things that happened most recently was the hashtag Proud Africans demonstration that was held at the UN. We've worked to make sure we get an accurate count in the census that was done in 2010, another one coming up in a few years, by the way, to make sure that the full benefits of the African community and its totality will come together. We've looked into the NYPD and FBI surveillance of Muslim mosques, many of which are African and African American mosques. We've looked into that particular issue, and we focus a lot of energy and time on crisis points in Africa. So we have a Stop Museveni campaign because we think that much of the horrendous death and destruction that's taking place in the Congo is because of the mischief making of Museveni, who's the longtime president supported by the U.S. In Uganda. So again, these collaborative projects is what is the essence of what the Institute of the Black World 21st Century stands for, in terms of trying to add that. And a part of the principle here is that we can learn from each other. That if we just come together and talk to each other and network with each other without giving up any of our organizational sovereignty and so forth, then we can be much more effective. It's a united front kind of thing. It's really unity without uniformity, and facilitating those kinds of efforts is at the heart of what we do at the Institute of the Black World 21st Century. And of course, we also do IBW is the organization that sponsors actually the Haiti Support Project, and we haven't been to Haiti lately. I'm trying to figure out a time now to carve out the next delegation to Haiti. But over the years, we have taken literally hundreds of African Americans and Haitians, for that matter, to Haiti. In fact, we've been responsible for persuading some Haitians that they ought to go back home and check out their homeland. And we provide, you know, material support for schools on the ground there, some 4,000 school children in the northern part of the country. And we take people to La Citadel, one of the greatest monuments to freedom and democracy and human rights, human rights in the world. The Citadels is the northern part of the country near Cape Haitian that sits atop a mountain, probably, I don't know, maybe 4,000 feet up in the air. And it was built to deter the French from ever coming back, from ever invading again. It is an incredible monument that was conceived by black minds, built by black hands, and it is the cornerstone. It is the major fortress in a series of forts that was built by Jean-Jacques Dessalines and Henri Christophe to deter the French from coming back. And it's unbelievable. It's like going to Goree Island or going to some of the other great places where it is on UNESCO's historical sites registry, because it is such a phenomenal structure and edifice, if you will. So the Haiti Support Project does that. During the earthquake, we were able to mobilize over these airways somewhere in the neighborhood of $300,000 in material support that we put on the ground. Developmental material support. We didn't focus so much on food and clothing and those kind of things. That was relatively small, but we focused on organizations. There were some women's organizations, for example, who had their headquarters destroyed. We helped to help have them rebuild it. Journalists, similarly, who had their headquarters destroyed. We gave capacity building grants and grants that would help do microcredit lending and things of that nature to help build and strengthen the infrastructure. We gave grants to soccer team there. It was not just a soccer team, but a soccer team that was doing educational and civic engagement in the community and those kind of things. So we want to continue to do this work and to strengthen it. And it needs more attention. It needs more of my time in order to get this done so that, you know, we can really, really have a formidable institution that really is very simple. The principle is very sensible. It's not about charismatic leadership and all that kind of stuff. It's just the idea that we are the leaders we've been looking for, that the answers to our questions as black people reside within our bosom, within our hearts, within our brains, such that if we were to cooperate with each other, collaborate with each other, share with each other, that we have a much greater opportunity to heal black families and communities. In fact, one of the kind of slogans that we put out there is one that's called, we say that the Institute of the Black World 21st Century is a good faith facilitator, a resource center that promotes cultivating a culture of collaboration. Cultivating a culture of collaboration. When you say culture, that means it's in your bones, and you don't have to think about it. Cultivating a culture of collaboration to heal black families and communities, to heal black families and communities and nations, so that you don't, you know, instead of running away from cooperation, you run to it. It's like in your bones. It's instinctive now. That's what happens with culture. You don't think about it. You just do it because it's been internalized that you should do it. And so that's a key feature of what we try to do over and over again all across the country. And again, it was also reflected in this amazing gathering that we pulled together in Newark. The town hall meeting was just the public part. The meetings that we had with resource persons, experts, community organ, urban specialists to help bolster and buttress the economic development plans of the Honorable Raj J. Baraka is an illustration of the kind of cooperative work and what it can do, you know, if we all sort of begin to pool our brain power and our financial resources in a way that will be very, very effective in helping to strengthen our communities. And we certainly need that. We need that. I mean, this is, again, it's not a brilliant idea. It's an elementary idea. But it is one that sometimes we resist. We go into our own silos. We go into our own little corners. And as a result of that, we don't really get maximize the work that could be done. Sometimes it's about specialization and division of labor. If we have organizations that are already doing outstanding economic development work, that have blueprints for economic development, maybe we should look at their work before we think we have the greatest idea of all time. Over and over again, people come up to me and they say, "Well, Ron, I got an economic program." I say, "Well, you know, have you looked at Powernomics? Have you looked at the work that's being done by FraserNet? I mean, there are these, you know, there's the Black Wealth 2020 plan. There's a plan I forget now that's I've really signed up for it too, out of Atlanta. It'll come to me in a minute. So these are things that exist, and we try to point people in that direction. If you're looking at voter registration at the national level, IBW is not ready to launch a new voter registration organization because we have organizations that are doing that work. We want to make sure that they're strong. That's a specialization and division of labor. We go where there's a gap. If there's a gap, we move to fill that gap. Or if we think it's important to prioritize a piece of work like the war on drugs, we look to other organizations to help us understand how to do that work. We just add it to it as opposed to claiming that somehow we were the experts and going and then putting ourselves in a silo. So what we try to do is always function in a cooperative and collaborative way. Well, I didn't really mean to talk much about those things, but unfortunately we had a miscommunication, which I take responsibility for, in communicating with President Marcia Keys at York College, because the 30th and the 1st was probably confused in my tired brain at this time, and President Keys had a conflict and therefore could not join us. However, joining us shortly, we hope, will be the Vice President for Student Development at York College, Dr. Vincent Banray, followed by Vico Morris, who is a special assistant to VP Badway, and we've collaborated on a number of projects, and we want to be able to share those with you. So we're going to take a break and come back and continue this special edition of Vantage Point. And that special edition is Countdown to the Professor's Retirement. And that retirement is not from the movement. It is retirement from the position of distinguished lecturer at York College City University of New York. And we're planning, and please take note of this, because we want the community to come. It'll be my final campus community lecture, not my final lecture of all time, hopefully, but my final campus community lecture, which we call entitled Toward a More Perfect Union, Finishing the Unfinished Black Freedom Struggle. It'll be on Thursday, May 17th at the Performing Arts Center, the atrium of the Performing Arts Center, 9445 Guy Brewer Boulevard in Jamaica, Queens, 11451. And there'll be a reception at 6 o'clock. Program starts at 7. And we hope to have a really, really excellent time. And we look forward to interfacing with you on that particular date. It is the 64th anniversary of the Brown versus Board of Education decision. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we hope to be joined by the Vice President of Student Development at York College. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and rearranging the deck a little bit. VP Van Ray is going to be joining us after our next guest, who's a very special person at York College, the University of New York. She's actually the executive assistant to Vice President Vincent Van Ray, who is in charge of the Office of Student Development at York College, the University of New York. Ms. Vika Mars, welcome to Vantage Point.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Daniels, for having me on your show.
Well, I'm delighted to have you on. We got a few things a little scrambled this morning, but
we'll
get them all straightened out. As I tell one people, one of the reasons I'm retiring to some extent is I got so many irons in the fire. Sometimes we commit faux pas, and one of them was, I think, transmitted the wrong date to our president in terms of when the interview would actually be. So that created a half an hour of me doing a commentary, testing my skills in that regard. But now that we have you, that's wonderful. Tell us a bit about how you came to York College. What's your background in that regard?
Oh, wow. Okay, so I am a Cardinal. I am an alum of York College. I was a non-traditional student, served in the military, you know, had to break my enrollment for deployment. I was a psych major, and though I was a psych major, I found that I developed a very strong passion for the student experience and just making sure that other non-traditional students benefited, you know, they reaped all the benefits that were available, which most of them did not know, to them to have a successful collegiate career.
So now, I remember you, it doesn't seem like, but you were like a serious veteran. You had some terms in Iraq, did you?
Actually, we lucked out, my unit. We did go overseas. However, I ran operations in Kuwait.
Oh, in Kuwait. Okay. I remember vaguely that you were over there somewhere.
Yes. But yeah. I just want to, you know, start off by thanking you for your years of knowledge and knowledge building. It's been an honor to work with you at York, especially while assisting in the implementation of your vision to send our students to the 50th anniversary of the Selgar Pilgrimage. Your vision gave rise to a new generation of student activists, who Dr. Selina T. Rogers, who you'll have later on, coined Selma Scholars. You know, these scholars returned so energized that they each ran for our student government, where they made great strides in regard to a positive change on campus.
Right. Yeah, that was without question. I call it in our press release my crowning achievement. It was something I always wanted to do, and had the privilege of actually having Dr. Keys go a couple of years earlier. I think it was 2013, she asked me when we took 9 students to Selma in that year.
Mm-hmm.
But the big one
was
2015, and whoa, what an incredible experience that was.
Yes.
And it would not have been possible without your help and everybody pitching in. VP Van Ray was very receptive and cutting through all the different issues and so forth to make sure it happened, and it was just absolutely remarkable. Now, you also, talking about your experiences, you work on, I know every time I come to the office recently, there's a new project that you're working on. There was one the other day that caught my attention. But talk to us about some of the special forums and some of the special activities you've been organizing in order to engage students and to have students have a sense of who they are and you know, both culturally, historically, and that kind of stuff.
Yes. So most definitely. Thank you. This project started off with just having commitment to seeing more Black History Month events. So I chaired a Black History Month committee on campus. And from that and from the dialogue that ensued during these events, we had a Good Hair event, the need for Black studies in academia. We also had an event on differences across the diaspora. Issues that I thought died with my generation, I realize are alive and well today, where you have not only our young ladies, young men as well, struggling with identity, struggling with their culture, struggling with their, hair, color. I was flabbergasted you know, just to listen. And it showed me the importance for a continuation of these events. And these students actually asked and clamored to see a continuation of these, you know, for these type of events and these type of discussions. Because they were like, you know what? I know I'm more. I know I'm more than just this, or more than what people tell me that I ought to be. So this led to a critical lecture series that I've been honored to share with Dr. George White, who is the chair of history and philosophy at York College. We started off, our first event was actually on those five controlling images of black women in the media, which was a very powerful event. It not only drew our students, but our high school students, as well as our non-traditional learners. And we really had this intergenerational dialogue that ensued that was just powerful. The next event, yes, was on Black Wall Street. This was driven by students from the Black Student Union who said, you know, we always hear that we were slaves, but I know we were more than that. And I would love to hear something where we talk about times where we had more and we did more. So once again, another powerful event.
Yeah, that was one. I think that's the one that caught my attention because I said, wow, I said, Sister Vika stretching out here, Black Wall Street, you know.
Yes, yes. Like I said, I have a commitment to engagement, you know, to engagement of our students. You know, the college has a goal to enhance and expand on opportunities for engaging, rigorous, and transformative learning experiences. And here I have the benefit and the advantage of creating a platform where I don't have to teach to a test, so to speak. You know, we can discuss these issues which are outside of a curriculum or outside of one's discipline, because we have some fabulous professors such as yourself here at York, and students don't necessarily get exposed to the best and the brightest of what we have to offer, you know, especially if it's outside of their major. Mm-hmm. So by having these discussions, you could be a business major and partake and listen to a professor, George White. You know, you could be a fine arts major and listen to Dr. Ron Daniels, because, you know, I will be bringing you back. I have to bring you back next year to lead one of these lectures. But I think that's just the beauty, and that's where the passion is.
Well, I'm intrigued by the fact that, because, you know, a lot of times it's hard to get students out. I was interested. I think I participated in one on the need for black studies, which that one I was, wow, this is an interesting topic, because, you know, given the fact that I've been doing this work for so many decades, you know, I know some of the founders of the black studies movement and whatever. But I was surprised. The room was packed.
Yes.
And there was a lot of interest and a lot of questions that were being raised. And I'm just wondering, are we cycling back or coming back to another cycle of student interest in a way that maybe wasn't true maybe 5 years ago or so, that students are now, maybe because of Black Lives Matter, Movement for Black Lives, the things that are happening externally, it's triggering, you know, much more student interest. It seems to be that seems to be the case.
Yes, most definitely. What I find is that this cohort, the current cohort we have right now of students, they are all about that civic engagement. You know, they care about these critical issues. Whether they're the high school students and they're considering going to an HBCU, or if they're a current college student and they're just wanting that big college experience here on the campus, there is definitely an interest and a purposefulness into discussing these topics, and to, you know, you find this there's an activist spirit that's emerging amongst these students. You know, like, they're not here to just follow the crowd. You know, they want to be trailblazers. They want to learn their history. They want to build upon it and improve it, and they want to improve their experience. And I think we should all encourage it.
Right. So what exciting new projects do you have? Of course, it's the end of the semester now, but as you look to the next semester, what are some of the things that you're looking forward to?
So working with Dr. George White, we're looking to expand and basically create and build an entire calendar of events. We're going to build and expand on this platform. She being from history and philosophy, I hope to open this up to our colleagues in business, economics, and other disciplines where we can now use the experts, you know, that we have on campus to tackle these critical issues. So those are some of the things. Dr. White, we're in the throes right now of screening a film named Profile, and bringing in the writer director for that film to campus. We'll also be, you know, vetting and speaking to our students to find out what are the topics right now that are really pulling at their heartstrings. What are the things that are really paining them that they see occurring that they would like us to tackle?
Right. Well, it's a good way to go, and you're certainly doing a wonderful, wonderful
job. I learned from the best, Dr. D. I learned from the best.
All right. I think you have just a natural talent for this and an eagerness. And it takes that, by the way, because a lot of people occupy spaces and, you know, they get a check and they go home.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you have to have, and you have that special penchant, that passion. It's there. Events are taking place. You're always checking to make sure everything's okay and whatever. So that's the kind of loving care that is required in order to encourage students. And I think the student government seems to be more lively than ever before. I mean,
most definitely.
Seems to be aggressive and wanting to really get things done. You know, and that's exciting, you know, because
yes.
Students can be very, very apathetic. Now, is our VP ready? Has he returned from the meeting yet?
Yes, our VP has returned, and he is ready to go.
All right. Well, we're going to let you go, and we thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're gonna connect next with Vice President Vincent Bamray. So thank you so much. Appreciate
it. You're very
welcome.
See you soon. No problem.
All right. So that was Vika Mars, and she is dynamic. I mean, she really, really works hard in the Office of Student Development. And I work very closely with that department, and many of the projects that I've worked on has been with the support of and the engagement of Vice President Vincent Bamray, who was actually in, you know, he's been very busy. He broke away from a meeting to come because we had, again, we didn't get the president because the president's in this big meeting, and he was in the big meeting, and again, that was just a little faux pas on my part. So do we now have Vice President Bamray? Are you there, sir? Haven't got him just yet. We'll connect with him momentarily. Vice President Vincent Bamray, talking about his background. I think he came over from Medgar Evers College, actually, and joined our staff. But we want to get a little bit of his background because he's another, the enthusiasm coming out of that office is just infectious in terms of the students, his excitement and commitment. Again, it's been very good. VP Bamray, are you there?
Yes, sir.
All right, sir. So
good morning.
We just had you were preceded by your excellent, outstanding executive assistant, Vika Mars. And
yes.
And so we wanted to get you on. Appreciate you taking time to be a part of this program today as we count down to the retirement of the professor, as we're calling this special edition. And you have been, I wanted to thank you so much for the collaboration, the enthusiasm of in fact, it was hard for me to keep up with you in terms of the different programs and ideas that we share. But first of all, let's talk a little bit about your background. You didn't start at York. Give us a sense of your background, how you came to be at York.
Well, I'm the first one in my family to go to college. My parents migrated here from Puerto Rico in the late 40s after my father served in World War II. Basically, he had a seventh grade education, my mother second grade. You know, so they migrated to the U.S. for, you know, for better opportunities. So upon graduation from high school, I went to LaGuardia Community College in CUNY. And after graduating, I got my first position in 1977 working as a coordinator for student activities within student affairs. And I guess that was the beginning of my start of my professional career. You know, after graduating from LaGuardia, I then went on to get my bachelor's degree in business administration from the CUNY BA program, then went on to Baruch, got my master's in public administration, and then I completed my my PhD at NYU in higher education administration. In terms of working within the university, this past November, I completed my 40 years working in CUNY. Mm-hmm. You know, I worked at LaGuardia 23 years. I worked at Medgar Evers for 13 years. And this coming August, I'll be 4 years at York. And it's all been, you know, all my my positions have been within student affairs. I have a dear heart for students, you know, especially, you know, those that are coming, you know, to access higher education with, you know, dreams and aspirations similar to like I did, you know, about 40 some odd years ago. So I'm driven by that.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, because one of the things I feel very passionately about, and I'll speak to this in my final lecture as I'm thinking of the different elements I want to comment on, is just how important CUNY is. I mean, that is to say, the City University of New York as a public space, you know, which gives opportunities to the sons and daughters of working class people, poor and middle class and so forth, in a way that they can compete with the graduates of Harvard and Yale and NYU and whatever. Speak to us about the importance, really, of CUNY as a concept.
You know, the university is, I'd say, the big equalizer in terms of, you know, that because it provides access, you know, to higher education. You know, hundreds of thousands of individuals have been able to transform not just their lives, but the lives of their families and their communities as a result of the university. You know, and it's a lot to fathom in terms of the impact that the university has, but it does have a big impact. I'll share with you, for example, when I first went to the university, you know, being the first in my family to go, after I went, then my younger brother went, my sister went, my cousins went, my sister-in-laws went. Now I have nephews and nieces that are going. So, you know, that same effect in terms of the impact it had on me, it's had on, like I said before, hundreds of thousands of individuals that are seeking, you know, to better their lives, you know, for their families and their communities. And I believe that, you know, I believe strongly that the university is that particular mechanism that can help people to affect change in their lives.
Now, as I was commenting that, you know, there's a certain energy and passion that emanates from your office. I mean, you know, it's you're constantly on the move, planning programs, counseling students. Randy Punder, who's another person that I have great regard for. You know, it just seems to be just this all-out commitment, you know, to in fact, enable and empower students. So talk to us about some of the programs that emanate from your office in that regard, in terms of your vision and mission for empowering students.
Well, you know, the mission of student development at the institution basically gets summed up into four words, you know, four conceptual frameworks. One is integration, you know, the fact that, you know, working with academic affairs and other entities of the college, we try to integrate the students into the institution as quickly as possible, you know, when they're entering either as freshmen or as transfers. The second is engaging them, you know, at every different level. You know, we engage the freshman students, you know, with introductory programs, activities, self-exploration, getting, you know, for them to understand their history much better. Then we also focus on involvement, you know, both inside and outside the classroom, you know, because we believe that these student development is here to support the academic enterprise. You know, that's the main focal point. You know, students are coming to get their education, but at the same time, we want to make sure and we try as much as possible to provide them with a well-rounded education that basically, you know, taking what happens in the classroom and applying it outside the classroom through experiential learning. And the other one is validation, you know, to validate our students. So a lot of our students come, they may have baggage with them and so on, and, you know, maybe they have not heard some kind words and so on. So we basically work with every student where they're at to help them to get to a higher level. And, you know, when you take a look at, you know, in terms of our student body here at York, about, you know, we have over 8,400 students, you know, 61% of York students come from households that earn less than 30% annually. You know, 77% live with their parents or guardians. And in terms of the diversity, there, you know, students come from over 120 countries. They speak over 87 languages. And with all that, there's a rich diversity at the institution. You know, currently our student population is a majority, 41% of the student population is currently black or non-Hispanic, and 65% are women. Mm. You know, so with all those statistics, the student body, you know, through the various different clubs and organizations, student government, and generation of student activity fees, we have over about $1 million of student activity fee that's distributed to clubs, organizations, you know, the athletics program. You know, we have a men's center, women's center, counseling, services for students with disabilities, career services. So, you know, we offer a wide variety of support services that complement the academics, but are geared, you know, to help to develop our students.
Well, you know, one of the things I've enjoyed is collaborating with you on a number of different projects, and I want to call attention to one specific project that you wanted to pull together. And we had the tragedy of one of our students actually having been the victim of one of these, you know, these crimes, these murders in the community. And you pulled together a group of us to have a special forum around that because you didn't want that to be lost. You wanted people to remember and to have a sense of how we could follow up to try to deal with those kind of issues. Would you speak to that?
Oh, yes. That particular event, I believe, was the title was Do Black Lives Matter to Black People?
That's right, yeah.
And it was a very, and I give more credit to you, sir, because I think you're the one that came up with the theme, and we sort of worked around, you know, with you to make it happen. And, you know, I think the program, you know, focused itself in on the deaths of, you know, black young men and women from, you know, by the hand of other blacks. And it was, I guess, very emotional event, because during the time that we were having that particular activity, one of our students, who happened to be a second semester freshman student from the Caribbean, you know, also the first one in his family to go to college, where it was a Halloween, and he was going with his friend to visit another friend. And as soon as he left his house, an assailant, who until this day has not been caught, shot both young men, and they both died. So at the event, you know, the parents were there. You know, the nephews and nieces came, who invited them to participate. But the event itself was so powerful, you know, because you had, an organization group of, you know, made up of mothers who lost their, you know, who lost their children. Right. And then you had a men's group from East New York who, you know, have been able to stop gang violence because some of the gang members themselves have become advocates against gun violence. So it was a well-attended event, but a very powerful event in that it just allowed people to, you know, to share their thoughts about this particular concern and issue, but at the same time to discuss ways of how to prevent it.
Right. And by the way, it was campus and community, you know,
because
a lot of people, we had students, but we had a good large number of people who actually came from the community. And I say that because a lot of what we've attempted to do has been campus and community, connecting the campus and the community in a way that, you know, I'm sure happens in other places too, but it also happens very much at York because of York's history and just connectivity to the community and all of those things. And I guess finally, as we run out of time, I just have to thank you so much for the tremendous support that your office provided, and Vika spoke to this as well, to the pilgrimage to Selma, that, you know, we had to figure it all out, get all the logistics. It was a huge undertaking, but, you know, with your help, it happened, and it was just an incredible experience.
Well, if I may, Dr. Daniels, before close, you know, you were a very inspirational force behind that happening. You know, as you mentioned, the logistics of getting people there, you know, the hotels and flights and our students driving down, you know, with the faculty members, you know, as their chaperones. Those students that went on to that particular event in Selma, their lives were totally transformed, you know, totally transformed. And as a result of your vision, you know, to connect our young people with their history, which I think is one of the most powerful tools, you know, that there is, because if we don't know our history, we're doomed to repeat it.
That's right.
And these young people went, they met with historical figures, you know, from the civil rights movement. But when they came back here, they ran for student government. A lot of them are, in fact, one of the president, Rochelle, she was working for Letitia James. Mm. And, you know, she's still pursuing that in terms of, you know, social work, but with a community activism component. So we want to thank you, you know, for the countless amount of years that you have worked with, not just in providing instruction to our students, but opening their eyes, you know, to so many other topics, you know, that they normally would not have engaged in if it were not for the lectures, you know, that you've been you've implemented at the school as our distinguished lecturer.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And again, I've really, really enjoyed, you know, working with you. And I'm sure we'll find ways to continue. So thanks much. Appreciate you spending time. And we're looking forward to May 17th. I'll talk to our audience more about that, because that will be a campus and community lecture as well. And we want the community to turn out strong in order to for that occasion. So thank you very much, VP Van.
Thank you very much, sir, and be blessed.
All right. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here. Come back with two of our dynamic scholars and faculty members at York College, Professor George White, whose name has already been referenced, and Dr. Selena Rogers from the Social Work Department. We'll be right back after we take this break. Okay, we're back in a very special edition of Vantage Point, which is called Countdown to the Professor's Retirement, and it's a tribute to your college, City University of New York. I'm trying to share with you the delight that I've had being a distinguished lecturer at your college, all of the wonderful people at this institution. It has really been a blessing for me to be at your college and to be its first distinguished lecturer. And, of course, you know I always open up my shows. If I'm on the radio here or Sirius XM, I'm always opening with people being clear that I'm associated and affiliated with York College, City University of New York. And now we have two of, as I said before, our really, really dynamic, popular, outstanding scholars at York College, City University of New York, both of whom have been referenced by our previous guest. We have joining us now Dr. George White, who's chairman of everything. The Department of History, Philosophy, Anthropology. I mean, you know, I mean, brothers spanning the globe, you know. He's the Black Panther. And, of course, Dr. Selena Rogers, Associate Professor of Social Work. And, you know, I'm envious because, you know, I walk on the campus and there's a big picture of her one semester. Then it comes down. Then the next, there's another big picture of her. She's done this. She's done that. And then I opened up the Academic Affairs Journal. I said the other day, I said, well, this is the Selena Rogers Journal. And I got to tell you, Professor Rogers, you're on blast because Baba Leonard Dunstan, I saw an email. He shot it out all over the country to people associated with the social workers and so forth. And they may be tuned in because they're so proud of you. And he sent that notice out. You know, I was noticing that this morning. So again, Professor George White, welcome to Vantage Point.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Thank you. Thank you.
And Dr. Selena Rogers, welcome to Vantage Point.
Thank you. Hotep, Baba Dr. Daniels.
Yes. Well, let's talk about first you, Dr. Rogers, and your journey to York College. We may have talked about this before, but tell us how you kind of got to York College. Are you a native New Yorker, educated in the CUNY system? Just give us a little bit of that background, because you just bring such passion and vision to the work that you do. And I'm just wondering just how you came to be at York.
Well, thank you. Let me just first say it's always an honor and a privilege, and I don't care what I'm doing, Dr. Daniels. I make time. When you call, I'm there. So I arrived at York in 2002 by way of my mentor, Dr. Tricia Bentgoodley, who was actually teaching part-time in the Department of Social Work, which was a program at that time. And I, although am not educated within the CUNY system, my passion lies for public education. At no point is there a disconnect between who I am and who my scholars are and what York does to bridge the both. I am a resident, a lifelong time resident of York College. I am a native New Yorker, born and raised in Harlem. I am committed to public education, the rigorous educational system that York has, and I appreciate your saying your affiliation with York College. There's not a breath, a word that I speak that does not intersect who I am in this community with that of York College. I may travel all four corners of the world, but my love and my life belongs here to York and to the Southeast Jamaica community. Mm-hmm.
Professor White, your journey to York College.
Well, mine begins a little differently, but before I start that, I just want to say that although I've never been in a class with you, I have been a student of yours for decades, and I remember first kind of encountering you when I was a senior in college in 1984, and you were helping run Jesse Jackson's presidential campaign. So for people like me, you've been a tremendous inspiration. I just want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
I'm actually from the South. I was born in Birmingham, Alabama, and grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee, and was teaching at the University of Tennessee just before taking the job here. So I'm not a native New Yorker. My wife is, and she grew up here in Southeast Queens. And so it seems it's kind of natural for me to fit myself into the vibrant life that we have at York College.
Right. Professor Rogers, both of you have such dynamism, and the students gravitate to you because of the work that you do. Talk to us about the kind of work that gets done in the social work and the social work club and these days that you take students up to Albany. I mean, it's just, you know, whenever I get ready to do an event, I check in and make sure the social work's on board. I understand. I'm an organizer.
Look, I like your style. Absolutely, Dr. Daniels. So let me just first start and just give praises and, you know, just people really need to understand what you did in terms of your vision for the Selma delegation and, you know, just a Bloody Sunday and going with all of the different student scholars, but certainly under your leadership. All of them came back transformed. I came back transformed. And anytime we have an opportunity to serve as advocates, to really get people to understand on a macro level what the vision of our journey has to be, and it has to be partialized not just here at York College, but we need to be able to take the scholars off campus to do this work. So traveling with the scholars, you know, be it to Selma, traveling with them to Albany every year, I think I've taken them probably 11 years at this point, and they have an opportunity to bridge what it is that they do in the classroom with the different elected officials who have been strong supporters of York College, and not just York College, but specifically, I know all of you have heard about the new MSW program that will be launching in fall 2018. I am the founding director. It was the scholars who really advocated for that program to be here. It has been an arduous journey to get the program here. It's been over 9 years for us to advocate for that program. We have the support of the stakeholders in the community. We have the support of the elected officials, of the president, you know, Dr. Marcia Keys, of the provost. Dr. Moldovan was another strong advocate and trailblazer for this program. But we go up to Albany to advocate for the issues that the scholars see are important to them. This is not a platform for myself as a faculty member. This is the platform and the issues and the agenda items that they want to see that are relevant to York College, to the profession of social work, and to them as scholars and what's going on in everyday life. When we talk about Black Lives Matter, those are issues that are relevant to them that they need to have on the agenda of the elected officials as they move forward and how they're funding programs that will benefit our scholars here at York College and the surrounding community.
It is, and it's really amazing because I've seen, you know, them prep for these sessions and they take it on with such enthusiasm, you know, which I think is really, really a reflection of the faculty, you know, in your department, but also a reflection of your spirit, you know, in terms of, and it's rigorous. You know, that's one of the things sometimes people think that, you know, this is not cake stuff. I mean, it's cake stuff. It's good stuff, but it's rigorous as well. Professor White, mm-hmm. Talk to us about, and I didn't include, you know, you also Black Studies. I should have included the Black Studies piece in there as well.
Oh, yeah,
you also are head of some, but I, you know, you're the Imperial George White.
There you go.
Everything.
Well, it's just because our department is a blended department. So
yeah,
we've got six disciplines: history, philosophy, anthropology, Black studies, interdisciplinary studies, and cultural diversity, right, all under one roof. And we, you know, the disciplines kind of work independently, but, you know, collaboratively as well. And our department vision really kind of says a lot about where we want to go. We say that we want to educate for democracy and justice. So we have our classes that are what you might find, you know, in any other institution in terms of whether it's, you know, American history or if it's ancient philosophy or if it's philosophy of law or cultural anthropology or, you know, a Black studies class like our Black Women of the Atlantic World class or the civil rights class that Brother Andrew Jackson teaches, once a year. We have a ton of offerings, most of which not only address basic, factual and pedagogical matters, but we really do try to teach beyond the content to make
these historical things come alive. So they're just, they're not just abstractions, but that they have meaning, and we connect that meaning to what the students are dealing with, whether it's Black Lives Matter, whether it's just trying to get a job, or whether it's, you know, relations within a community, that's rather diverse, whether it's a African diasporan community or a community that combines, various racial or ethnic groups, that how can we, live, together, in a way that is actually sustainable for everyone.
And I just had Bika Mars on earlier.
Yes.
And she was talking about the powerful collaboration that the two of you have developed around really introducing, you know, various topics in Black studies, you know, outside the classroom, these different fora. And I had the privilege of being a part of one of them at the African American Resource Center about the need for Black studies, which I found very energizing. And
it
was good to have people in this generation thinking about these issues in a way that, you know, you have these lulls when it seems like people kind of go away for a while, then all of a sudden there's this resurgence of interest. So talk to us about these lectures that you've been having and planning, some of which in the African American Resource Center, others are being in collaboration with Vika and the Department of Student Development.
Right. Well, it actually started, innocently enough, just an accident. Our Center for Teaching and Learning here does every semester what they call a peak week, and they invite faculty and staff to go sit in on a class so we can all see each other and how other people teach. And so it just happened that I was doing a lecture out of Patricia Hill Collins' great book, Black Feminist Thought, in a class that Vika and a couple of other people had come to see. And she was like, well, you know, we need to do this for the whole campus. I'm like, yeah, I'm down for that. That would be fantastic. And so we did the program on the five controlling images of Black women in the media, as a way of moving outside the classroom and trying to reach students who are not necessarily in our department, around these issues and expanding it. And, you know, it was such a wonderful experience that she's like, well, let's do it again. You know, what else could we do? And, you know, I think either I'd heard you talking about Black wealth creation or someone else, and I was like, well, what about Black Wall Street? And so we just did a program on that, which I thought was, you know, again, really fantastic, mostly because of the dialogue and the interaction, you know, after the program, but, you know, really digging into, I think, the lessons of Tulsa, of Greenwood, Oklahoma, Greenwood and the neighborhood in Tulsa, Oklahoma, first around Black wealth creation and this past that people have forgotten that, you know, we as Black people are able to create wealth and sustain it ourselves. And this was a community of roughly 11,000 Black people that had, you know, 108 different businesses and institutions right in their community. And this was their way to survive. And that it's been done before, it's been done recently, and it can be done again, I think was significant. But also significant in talking about mass violence and white violence and the race riot that destroyed Greenwood initially was really not about criminality, but about Black success, and getting the students to see connections to, you know, things that are happening today, whether it's around Marissa Alexander or Trayvon Martin or the sister up in Detroit, who we may have a program on in the fall, who, you know, could have invoked Stand Your Ground, and she did not, even though she was pregnant, and now is going to serve 2 years in jail. I mean, just insane. So we were talking about that, and the rumor mongering that led to the riot is no different from the rumor mongering and the so-called fake news being perpetrated today, mostly coming out of our White House. And so we thought that these would be great lessons to transcend time. You know, it's almost been 100 years since the race riot that destroyed Greenwood, and yet the lessons, I think, are really still fresh.
Yeah, and I was mentioning to Vika, and I have to just go back and tweak my brain on this, because that from friends who did a film. I don't know if it was called The Lessons of Haiti. It may be. I'll check it out.
Yes.
There's a film that would be a good film to show terms of this backdrop. A brother named Eddie Harris, and there's another person, I'm blanking on his name now. They did this film. It was a warm, willing film. I helped them to have it premiered at FraserNet, and then it's just out there. And it really shows both Tulsa. But then there's this place called Haiti. And you know, I love working in Haiti, so it's interesting that this community called Haiti, down outside of in north between Durham and Raleigh.
Right.
And
right.
It got wiped out too for different kinds of reasons. But I think it's so important that our students know this because we don't, that history is just not there in people's minds. And I'm glad that there's a new yearning and thirst, you know, for that knowledge.
Right. Absolutely.
And quickly, by the way, too, I'm upset too because you did a class on hip hop too, right?
Right. Yes.
Telling everybody, how come I can't come to the class? I'm running all over the country. I need to get.
Well, every fall semester we have a history of hip hop culture class, which is one of my favorites to teach, and it's not just about the music or the art per se, although it is, and what I really try to drive home to the students that this is art that is being created on multiple levels, whether it's the musical art form of rap music or if it's the dance form of breakdancing or graffiti, visual art, or the, you know, clothing that people wear. This is all art and expression of, you know, people who are in communities or coming from communities that feel as if they have no voice whatsoever. But it's also a wonderful class because it's a bit basically contemporary American history. So the history of the United States really tied tightly to New York City, you know, at the tail end of the civil rights movement and the retrenchment and the backlash to that civil rights movement that led to, you know, both the development of the art as well as the immigration of peoples from the Afro-Caribbean diaspora into the Bronx that, you know, flowered this wonderful culture. So it's a great way to teach not only about art, but also a great way to teach about this relevant history and public planning and, you know, say the unintended consequences of urban renewal or all these kinds of things that often, you know, get overlooked. And it's a fantastic class, and we're really lucky to be able to do that here at York.
Professor Rogers, if I recall correctly, you, first of all, everybody should know you're a Fulbright scholar. You know, among other things. You know, I mean, every time I turn around, I say, goodness gracious. I mean, I can't live long enough to get all these honors this woman is bringing down and deserves. But you do some special work on the continent, don't you?
I do. I actually, unfortunately, had to defer. I was supposed to be in Rwanda just last month to do some additional work and was unable to attend because of just the preparation needing to happen for the MSW program, which is, you know, certainly one of my immediate passions right now. But a lot of the work that I'm doing has to do with my scholarship around post-traumatic growth, really trying to merge CUNY's master plan mission in terms of raising the visibility of our university, which is now being deemed the greatest university in the world in terms of our tagline, but really helping to people to understand who we are within the context of social work and raising the awareness around structural oppression around the globe and really trying to institute different graduate-level social work programs and also raise the consciousness about what inclusion looks like. I think oftentimes when you have, and I appreciate Dr. White talking about the five controlling images, I think oftentimes there is a misperception of who we are in terms of how we are depicted in the media. And so a lot of the work that I'm doing now in a current project that I'm writing to for National Association of Social Workers speaks to the state of social work in New York City from policy to practice and the way forward and how we need to kind of begin to reframe perceptions of who we are as a people, as a folk, but certainly within the profession of social work. And I think this is especially important as I have a major passion for mentoring scholars in social work and beyond, but I really have to give a shout out to one of my scholars, Darrell Washington, who is currently at Columbia University and just had a piece published in Social Work Review on mass incarceration. So a lot of the work that I do and Dr. White does and a lot of the other really invested faculty members around here at York College do, we have to ensure that the investment that we're making now, you know, Baba Daniels, is what you have done for us. And so by being able to stand on your shoulders, then, you know, that makes it, you know, that more important for me to extend my shoulders for scholars to be able to forward with the work and the legacy that has come before them. And so I want to say thank you to you for creating platforms for me to moderate different venues and to be able to sit, you know, with, you know, Sister Terry Williams and to be able to be a part of a virtual platform to talk about reparations. Like, all of these different platforms is not by happenstance. You've created in your place of being here and your purposefulness of being here opportunities for me to be able to do the work that I do here at York College and around the world.
Well, we certainly appreciate that. I'm going to circle back now to something that you started with, because the pilgrimage to Selma was just such a remarkable experience. And it was made so because you and Professor Ian, I'm blanking his last name now, and I shouldn't do that.
Hansen.
Yeah. You know, y'all volunteered to be chaperones. Our vice president, Thomas, also went. We had faculty there. And you talked about that experience, both being transformative for the students, but being transformative to you. So share a bit of your perspective on this pilgrimage that we took for the 20th anniversary of the Selma to Montgomery March of Bloody Sunday.
Absolutely. I also wanted to mention two other folk that were also quite instrumental. Professor Jonathan Quash was chaperone, as well as Ms. Samia Bell, who's also a fellow social worker and the director of the SEEK program, which is really instrumental to the student body that we serve here at York College in this particular community and is doing some phenomenal work, both of them, Professor Quash in the Men's Center and Ms. Bell in SEEK. And so I would say, even from the onset, even before we left York College, just the rigor in terms of the evaluation of the applications of, you know, the scholars who had an interest for a variety of reasons, I really appreciated the diversity of the scholars who went. So it was not just, you know, African-American scholars who, you know, had some connection to the history of Selma, but it was really an opportunity for supporting and the dialogue and just the traveling down to Selma, the traveling from the hotel, because we didn't actually get an opportunity to stay in Selma because no one anticipated how massive this 50th would be. And so there was such, you know, some challenges of getting, you know, from location to location, but just even in the exchanges that were happening on the bus, and just having a platform to have dialogue about realities that I don't really think the contemporary scholars really understood what it meant to be in Selma and not this understanding of what rights and access to running water looks like, to have access to advocates. I continue to just sing the praises of the different speakers that were there and how they really impacted. And again, every time I see a Selma, and I appreciate Ms. Moss for referencing the fact that I named them Selma scholars, but for so many of the scholars that went that are not social work scholars, they would come up to me and they, you know, would say, you know, hey, you know, Selma scholar. And so they really took that on and right. They began to move in that type of fashion. And their main question when they came back was, how can we make a change here? And when we even had the talk back platform, there were really some charges that were given to them that they was able to really carry out. And I really appreciate the opportunity for them to be able to engage with Anthony Browder, you know, Ancestor Gregory. Like, there are so many people that just to see the admiration that the scholars have for them and to realize that they can really touch them and have conversations and dialogue with them was just really an awesome experience to watch how their lives change, but how their eyes lit up because they saw it as being such a disconnect because of the generations. I really was so thankful for the intersectionality and just the generations being able to connect and share the different experiences and really sit and listen. And again, Dr. Baba Dunstan, like everybody just extended themselves and helped the scholars really have an appreciation for our legacy. I am so thankful for that.
Well, the other thing, too, that is amazing, and I will forever cherish this image that we have because, you know, I've gone to South many, many years, so it can get a little chaotic. And it got, thousands and thousands of people, and nobody was ready for all of that.
No.
So when we got ready to march, it was also somewhat chaotic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, since I'm sort of a part of the family down there and helping out in whatever way I can, so it was really... our students stepped up to literally organize the front part of the march. I mean, they really locked arms and stood there. And then there was a story about this young kid who was being pushed around, and our students adopted him. And the mother wrote about it, how respectful our students were and whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's that image that we have on the poster of our students on the front of the mm-hmm. Selma reenactment march. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
It does not. It does not. That is something that our scholars will take with them for all of their life. And really, it kind of shapes what it is that the next steps of their journey and responsibility to, you know, the movement, the various movements that are happening, and what their charge and what their obligation and how they are purposefully placed and what their responsibility is going to be and must be for the generations to follow, and how they need to continue to uphold the legacy for those that have come before us.
Well, we want to thank both of you, Professor George White, Professor
Thank Sabrina you.
Rogers. You are among our brightest and best at York College, and particularly because of your engagement, both with the students, the community, and just broadening their vision for engagement in a world that needs our engagement. So we appreciate you so much spending time with us this morning on Vantage Point.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you
take
so
care.
Much. All right, be well. Wakanda for life.
That's right.
All right. Okay, we're going to take a break and come back, and it's going to be Dr. Anthony Andrews will join us for our final segment as we count down to the professor's retirement, and that is a tribute to York College, and that's on looking forward to May 17th when we're inviting the community to join us for my final lecture at York College, final campus community lecture, which will be entitled Towards a More Perfect Union, Finishing the Unfinished Black Freedom Struggle. Take a break. We'll be right back with Dr. Tony Andrews. Okay, we're back, and after an initial faux pas, because we inadvertently scheduled Dr. Keyes for the wrong date, the president of the university, that's because there's a need for more help up in here, which is my fault. But anyway, we hope that we're really, really shedding some light on this space and place that I've had the privilege of being a distinguished lecturer for more than a decade, as we count down to May 17th, the occasion of the 64th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education, where I'll be delivering my final campus community lecture at York College, and all of you are invited to be there. We'll get a little bit more details as we conclude the program, and again, we'll be looking to the support of WBAI in that regard. We're now joined by my partner in helping to do some incredible work at York College, Dr. Anthony Andrews. Dr. Andrews, welcome to Vantage Point.
Dr. D, thank you very much for having me, and thank you so much for being a mentor to me over the last several years. You're one of the reasons I am now a doctor, and one of the key reasons I am now a doctor. Through your conversations, through your support, through your inspiration, everything that you have done with me over the last several years has helped really to change my life. and I really appreciate everything you've done. I know that you'll continue to be my mentor, you know, as we move forward in life, but it's not going to be the same not having you here with me to be able to just ring you or go upstairs to the office and talk to you or have you come down to check on me to make sure that I'm doing everything I need to do. Although I know those late night phone calls when you think that I should be doing more will be coming.
That's true. I mean, you ain't off the hook yet, brother.
I understand that.
Well, I am profoundly appreciative to you because one of the greatest experiences I've had at your college, which, by the way, President Keyes initially was saying, well, do you really want to do this? I mean, you spend your time on the internship program, and because, you know, the program was had been there, one of the previous professor who helped create the program had stepped down from the political science department and traveled to Florida and sort of dropped it on me. And I said, well, I'm here to help in whatever way I can in the political science department. And I stepped into it, but I really didn't know what I was stepping into. I liked the idea, didn't know quite how to make it work until I ran into Dr. Anthony Andrews. And then we said, oh, we know how to make this work. And the internship program really is one in which we have been able to place students, you know, in various locations and places, and we'll talk about that a bit. But before we do that, Ashley, let's give a bit of your background. You are very deeply embedded to the community. Are you a native New Yorker by way of Jamaica, Queens, or did you hail from somewhere else?
Definitely. For the listeners out there who may not know much about me, I am a native resident of Jamaica and born in Jamaica Hospital and raised in Jamaica. Have strong roots, strong ties in this area, have been an elected Democratic official in this area as either a Democratic state committeeman or a Democratic district leader for 22 years, representing the area of Jamaica, and a little bit of Richmond Hill, a little bit of South Ozone Park, and all of Rochdale Village. And in addition to that, I serve on a number of different boards. I chair the Queens Hospital Center Community Advisory Board, and we're doing a lot of great things. We're tying Queens Hospital to the community there. And so I'm firmly entrenched in this community, and I've been doing a lot of different things in this community for a number of years. And your college has allowed me to do some incredible things. Working with you in the internship program, we've been able to take a lot of students from our community and put them in internships with the district attorney's office, with judges, with elected public officials. And some of them are going on to do some incredible things working with the public officials and after that public service life, like Al Kanu, who was a mentee of mine, who just won an election in Parliament in Sierra Leone. He started out as an intern with us here at York College, went to work for Senator Leroy Comrie when he was the council person, then worked for Council Member Danique Miller, and then went to Parliament about a year ago, or went to Sierra Leone to run for Parliament about a year ago and became a member of Parliament within the last few months.
Right.
So we've done some incredible things with our students here through the internship, through your leadership, Dr. Daniels, and we're going to miss that. I have no idea how we're going to be able to continue this internship without having a partner such as you to be able to help this thing and to move this thing along. But I understand. I certainly understand that there are other things that you have on the agenda, and, you know, traveling around the world to try to do things with the Pan-African Unity Dialogue. I understand there are critical issues for Black people throughout the world that need your leadership. So I'm just hoping that we'll be able to find someone to keep the program going, to carry on what we started and what I've been a part of for so long.
I want to talk a little bit more about that, because one of the things, by the way, I hadn't gotten the news on Al Kanu yet. I know that in another capacity, there were representatives of the Pan-African Unity Dialogue that were really the United Africa Congress specifically that were urging that the elections in Sierra Leone be peaceful, that they not be disruptive and so forth. So there were big press conferences and all kind of things that were encouraging. But I had not heard until just now that this ambition that Al Kanu, who was a former student of mine too, I mean, I had him for at least two or three classes, you know, and that's fun too, because, you know, we mentor, And sometimes right. you have to head knock with people like Al Kanu, bright student, but sometimes I'd have to just jack him up a little bit, you know what I mean? And, which I enjoyed. I mean, you know, because it's loving. It wasn't, you know, and whatnot, and to encourage him. And then he has a passion for this stuff as he went on, as you mentioned, to work with Senator Comrie, or then he was councilman, then Senator Comrie, and whatever. So that's good news. But we also have had students who, through our program, who actually have gone on to get jobs, who are actually working. You know, we have a person who's working with Congressman Meeks. We have a person who's working with Danique Miller, if I recall correctly. And we have people who are working with Patrick Jenkins, you know, who's a big-time right. lobbyist and so forth. So it's been a success, not only in terms of just watching students get some practical experience and to watch their eyes open up as they really get into these offices and learn how they work. You know, we tell them that it's important to do these internships because you get a good reference and a number of other things, but you may also get a job. And we've had probably somewhere between 10 and 12 of our students who actually are employed now in government. You still there, Dr. Andrews?
Yes, I'm here. I'm here, Dr. D. Okay. I thank you very much for saying that. I can go back to the internship many years and see how many students we've actually, you know, gotten positions with elected public officials through this office, some who are still working with public officials, some like Rashida Smith, who have gone on to form their own consulting firm, who has a very prosperous consultant firm that does work mostly in New Jersey. So there are several students that we have mentored over the years who've gone on to do some incredible things going through this mentorship. This mentorship internship, you know, we should probably coin a phrase, mentorship, because we do a lot of mentoring with the interns in this program, and some go on to do some incredible things, as we talked about. But I think that the key for us is finding those students who may not know exactly what they want to do in life and being able to mentor them through your class to get them to understand that there has to be a challenge for them to be able to go further in life, that if they want to be successful, they have to understand that there will be challenges, and it starts sometimes in your class, getting the work done, getting the input from them as to how the internship is helping them to see life in a different way, to get a sense of where they want to go in life. And I think a lot of them, after coming through the internship, realize what they want to do in life. A lot of them coming into the internship may have a slight idea, but they get a better idea of how they fit in with their degree and what they can do with a degree. And what people mostly don't know is that we take a lot of students who are not political science students right. and bring them through the internship.
That's right.
We take students from all disciplines around the college. And that allows some of these students to then begin to see the world in a different way. You may be a social worker, but working for the public advocate's office may not be something you thought you would do. But the public advocate's office needs people like social workers to help them with constituency casework.
Right, absolutely.
We've been able to do that, to give these students an opportunity to see the world in a little bit different way and to think about jobs and careers that they may not have thought about before, and mentored them as they've gone through the process of learning about themselves and about who and what they want to be in this world and how they fit into society. I think that's been the biggest role that this internship has played at your college under your guidance and direction and leadership, Dr. Daniels.
Yeah, and I want to cite one of the students, too, as I transition to talk to you about some of your other roles at York, because we've had students who have successfully competed for the CUNY-wide internships, and those are with a stipend, $2,000 or whatever, Women's Leadership Program, CUNY caucus program. And then I wasn't fortunate enough to get somebody already to Washington, D.C., but one of our students, Ashley Torres, she just knocked it out. I mean, she did probably a women's leadership. She probably did the CUNY Scholars Program. And then she did the Albany program, which meant that she went to Albany for a whole semester, with a stipend, and really got in there, working with elected officials and so forth. And then she's held several positions, and I understand now she's the chief of staff for Richie Torres, the councilman up in the Bronx. So that's an illustration, man. That kind of stuff, people don't understand when you're teaching that what really makes you feel good is these kinds of stories. And when you're in a situation, sometimes it's, you're dealing with people who are having a difficult time. They don't understand what's happening. You have to knock heads with them. But when the light bulb comes on and they see it and then they move on, I mean, that's, it ain't the money. It ain't the status. That's what makes you feel good. That's what teaching is all about. It's being able to have those kind of successes. And again, I got to thank you so much, because your vast network of elected officials and community agencies and so forth, you know, coupled with some that I had, we were able to give people all, as you said before, all kinds of experiences in ways that they would not have had previously. Again, you talk about some of the judges. I have to cite Judge Jackman Brown, and in particular, was just an amazing mentor to our students. I mean, students coming in, taking time with them, working with them, mentoring them in ways that, you know, a lot of students would come back and they would just see life entirely different, because these elected officials and community agency heads and so forth are taking time to mold and mentor and encourage the students. So again, I just want to thank you for helping partner with me on that. But you have other roles too. You have a leadership academy. Talk about some of your other roles at your college and the student development department.
Well, you know, the good thing is that I do, as you're right, Dr. D, I do so much at the college, and I'm a union delegate. About to become a New York State Union delegate, and about to become an AFT, American Federation of Teachers, national delegate to represent unions all across the nation. So I do so many different things. And in my educational role, I mean, I'll be teaching psychology and conflict resolution and management next academic year. And, of course, the Leadership Center right now is my big project. So the Center for Leadership Training, Service Learning, and Community Engagement. It's something I've been working on for a number of years and kind of put a pause on as I went through the doctoral process and making sure that I kept it on the radar of everyone here at the college, but didn't put it together quite. So now we're about two-fifths completion of the Center for Leadership Training, Service Learning, and Community Engagement. And, of course, it's supposed to do just what those facets and the title speak to. It's supposed to be leadership training, and my dissertation and doctoral studies have shown me that leadership training impacts Black males, and we have, obviously, Black males have the lowest graduation rate from high school and from college of any other race, gender in America. So my target group of Black male STEM majors was significant. How do we get these young Black men to talk about what has made them successful in some of the hardest, most difficult fields in the world, the STEM majors? And my study showed that leadership training actually can impact their persistence, their graduation rate, their GPA, after college, so on and so forth. So leadership training is a key component of what I do. And I have the National Society of Leadership Success. I'm the faculty advisor. We're celebrating the 10th year anniversary, which is our leadership training program for the college. I'm the faculty advisor of student government. Our student leaders who have a equal say in the governance of your college, working with them. So I do a lot in leadership training, and this center will impact more than just student government and the National Society. I'll be able to take the leadership training to students throughout the college and to give them an opportunity to be exposed to leadership training without having to pay a fee or a membership fee or whatever, such as they would have to in the National Society of Leadership Success. The service learning component is another key, because I believe in service learning, and I believe that students should go out in the real world and get experience, and learn through service. I'm a big proponent of servant leadership also. So we're talking about doing some really positive things with CUNY Central, in terms of service learning. And I'm going to ask you to participate in the retreat that we have to discuss that a little bit more, Dr. D.
Okay.
And the last piece, the community engagement piece, which is all part of our strategic plan and our 10-year plan at the college, being good neighbors to the surrounding community, that's right, going to be key also.
Right.
There are a lot of people that don't know what we do at your college, are not involved from the community, but yet this community was the major reason why this college is located here in South Jamaica and not on the campus of Queens College. The community fought for this college to be here. It's important that we do more to engage the community in what we do at the college. And so we're going to be putting together partnerships with the community engagement piece with a number of different entities and individuals in the community so that the college can be out there in the community more, working very closely with members and entities in the community to make this community a better place. If we're going to be the anchor of this community, then we have to be good neighbors, and we have to be able to let people know what we have here to offer. And part of that is giving them an opportunity to work with us through this community engagement initiative. And so that will be that part. So it's three components to this new center, and it's about two-fifths complete. Should have it complete by the summer, and then we'll have ribbon-cutting ceremony in the fall. The money has been given by the city council. Councilman Leroy Conley, when he was there before he became senator, gave some money. He will be a part of what we do here. Other city council people participated in that process. And we got $10,000 from the vice chancellor's office of the City University of New York to buy some supplies. So that's going to be a huge initiative that is undertaken this year at the college. And I think that it's going to be an incredible way for us to be able to engage the community in a different way. Right. With things that we're doing at the college. And I'm going to, again, have a retreat with internal and external stakeholders, including yourself, to be invited, one-day retreat, just to go over and discuss the mission and discuss how we can do these things in a way that is not only efficient but effective for your college and the community.
Well, you're an incredible asset to York College, an invaluable asset, and I have certainly enjoyed working with you and learning from you and exchanging ideas about, the nature of politics and how it should be organized and structured. But you are these many different facets that you've just exposed, extremely knowledgeable, extremely committed, and again, an incredibly invaluable asset to your colleagues. So I really enjoyed working with you. And, of course, our relationship will continue. You will continue to come to the Pan-African Unity Dialogue and all those things. I'm not retiring from the struggle. I just am stepping away from an incredibly powerful and meaningful tenure as distinguished lecturer at York College. So we'll continue to be connected. So I thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to share your work and your role at York College and our work together. So I thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Dr. D. Always my mentor, and the relationship always, I'm just so blessed to have had an opportunity to begin my relationship with you after hearing about you for so many years and the work that you did not only in the community but throughout the world. It's been a blessing to work with you, and we'll work on other things outside the college. And again, I appreciate you being a mentor to me and all the guidance you've given me throughout my life the last several years, and look forward to you continue to guide the direction and path that I take, not just here at the college but in the community and throughout the city of New York.
All right. Thanks much. Really appreciate it. Well, folks, just having a couple of more minutes. We almost pulled it off. It was, again, my faux pas. I really wanted to lead the show with President Dr. Marcia Keys, who is an incredible leader of York College, and to talk about her journey of coming up through the ranks and working at different colleges and the trip that she took in 2013 with 9 York College students to Selma and all of that good stuff. So that was my error, getting some dates confused, and I had everybody else lined up, but I apparently thought that May 1st was today when May 1st is tomorrow. So that's my bad, and I had to pay for it because I had to be the guest for half an hour. But I thank God and the ancestors that, I've been able to do those kind of commentaries and feel blessed to have that kind of ability, if you will. Again, the context for today's show: the final campus community lecture will be at a celebratory event that we're inviting all of you and the listening audience to come and be a part of. And that will be on Thursday, May 17th. The reception is at 6 o'clock. The program begins at 7 o'clock. It is in the atrium of the York College Performing Arts Center. That's 9445 Guy Brewer Boulevard. Public transportation, I think it's the J and the L to Jamaica Center, and the East train straight up into Jamaica Center. It's a couple of blocks walk and you're there. So go to the website ibw21.org. You'll see the press release. You'll see all the information on it. The campus lecture will be entitled Towards a More Perfect Union, finishing the unfinished black freedom struggle. I really want to see a lot of our WBAI listening audience and friends from the community be there for my final lecture as a distinguished lecturer at York College, City University of New York. Our fun drive begins next week, and we want to knock it out of the park. And we'll be back next week here on Vantage Point. Thank you for listening. See you next week.